This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have a leading authority on healthcare IT data. His name is Niall Brennan. He is the Director of Policy and Data Analysis Group for CMS. Good morning, Niall. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm great.
Well, one of the reasons we have him in the studio is to promote a big event he's going to be speaking at in just 2 days. And this event is with a group. You know, this town has all kinds of different groups. People are focused on security for the military. People are focused on healthcare IT. And that's the group we can talk about today. It's called HIMSS. If you are listening to this online, you want to fire up your little Google and find out what this group's all about, type in HIMSS, National Capital Chapter. They meet once a month, and they have bring in speakers like Niall to talk about healthcare IT. And from HIMSS, we have Barry Dickman, who is a senior consultant with Aegis.net. That's AEGIS.net, and co-chair of a program committee at HIMSS. Why don't you tell us more about HIMSS and the presentation in 2 days, Barry?
Great, John. Thank you very much. HIMSS, we're a chapter that's based in Washington, D.C., and our chapter currently consists of over 600 members who are passionate about health information technology management and that drive health information technology innovation. You know, our members represent hospitals, managed care organizations, integrated delivery systems, not-for-profit health organizations, as well as government agencies. So we're really happy to have Niall here with us. You know, our ongoing mission is to promote professional approaches to the development, operation, and improvement of healthcare information management systems locally and nationally. And again, that's why we're here today. Our next event is going to be held on Thursday, April 19th, and we're going to feature big health data, challenges, and opportunities. And after that, we're going to have one in May, which is going to be titled Emerging Health IT Innovations and Technology, Part 2. We've had tremendous turnout in our events. We have a wonderful public-private relationship with the federal agencies that come and support us. And we have a panelist discussion. And the one last month had over 165 folks attend that
And, you know, Niall doesn't have to do this. He's got plenty of headaches. I mean, he doesn't have to come to the radio station. He doesn't come to your group. But he is trying to be transparent and share with listeners and share with other people exactly some of the goals and objectives. And maybe the organizations who write software for these groups maybe can assist him in some way. And I'm really honored that he's being pulled away from his full-time job to do this. I think it's just great that he's doing this. He's being open and transparent. I mean, you hear this all the time, but very few people actually go amongst face-to-face and have face-off with individuals in this. So for more information, HIMSS-NCA.org. Is that right, Barry?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, great. Great. Let's get back to you, Niall. Niall, I gotta remember how to pronounce that one. Tell us about your background. People heard your accent. I'm sure they're scratching their heads going, is that South Africa? Or what kind of funny accent is it? Maybe tell about your accent and how you wound up working at CMS.
Thanks, John. So, I'm originally from Ireland. I grew up there and went to undergraduate in Ireland at University College Dublin. Back in 1994, I had the lucky happenstance of qualifying for a green card and receiving a scholarship to Georgetown University to do a master's in public policy. So I came to Washington, D.C. in 1994 and never left, fell in love with the city, fell in love with a girl, and here I am today.
Well, it's a great story. I love to hear that story. Georgetown University. But that's not your only background. You've worked at some very prestigious institutions along the way, including the Brookings Institute. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm a data geek, as you'll all find out over the next couple of minutes. So I've been privileged to work at a number of really interesting places. The Brookings Institution with Mark McClellan, a former CMS administrator. The Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, which provides advice to Congress on Medicare payment updates. And the Congressional Budget Office, which also provides a different form of advice to Congress in the form of cost estimates and projections of how much health legislation and federal health programs will cost over 5 and 10 year periods.
You're almost like a number one draft choice here. You've got commercial experience, you've got academic experience, and now you're working at CMS. So it's like you got a skill fielder is what they call in baseball. So you got the real good skills to help our audience learn more about healthcare IT and the CMS. And how long have you been with CMS now?
2 years.
2 years.
Oh. I started 1 week after the Affordable Care Act was passed. Perfect timing.
Well, that's interesting because a lot of people are gearing up to administer the Affordable Care Act, and we don't know what's going to happen in June. It could be interesting times, and that's no doubt about that. If you keep up with what's going on in the community here, you know that 2 weeks ago, the White House had this big shindig, and it was broadcast, and everyone was down there, all the big dogs in town down there, and they talked about big data. Now, when I first start thinking about big data, I think about meteorology and maybe about, medical records. I mean, medical records really is included in the conversation with, you know, collecting data points from Facebook and collecting data points from weather satellites, but also with medical information. So that's in and of itself. I think your job is trying to understand big data and how it works for CMS. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, tell me more about big data and where you think it fits in.
Well, you know, we truly live in an age of big data, and healthcare is possibly one of the areas where it can have one of the greatest impacts. Just to take my agency, CMS, as an example, we process and pay 1.2 billion healthcare claims every year. There are millions of hits to our website. There are hundreds of thousands of calls to our 1-800 numbers. And there are really millions and billions of other data points that are generated every week, every month. And the opportunities that big data and super parallel processing present is for us to finally harness this data in meaningful ways, mash it up together in new and innovative ways, and then also to try and get as much of the data out into the ether, out into the healthcare ecosystem, while obviously continuing to maintain and respect beneficiary privacy.
Now, Niall, there are listeners who can go toe-to-toe with you in defining big data, and there are other listeners that may be kind of fuzzy on it, and people toss this term around, and, oh, it's turbocharged. Oh, it's this, it's that. Oh, it's big data. How would you define big data? And today, how is it something to do with data sets or too large? Or how would you define big data for our listeners?
I personally define big data as a tool to enable users to become more in charge of their data destiny and to be able to more easily translate data into information. CMS has collected lots and lots of data for many, many years. What we've struggled at doing is turning it into actionable information for ourselves, actionable information for providers that we contract with, and actionable information for Medicare beneficiaries and the general public.
Well, one fellow who was at this event was a guy named Todd Park. And I think more and more listeners are going to find out about Todd Park. He's really a dynamic individual, supposed to be a lot of fun as well. And I think what Todd, he started working over, he said, look, we've got all this stuff. How can we take this stuff and expose it to individuals that they can take advantage of it and have it practical? I think that's just, in if you're sitting in a bus next to someone, you can say, look, we got a lot of stuff. We're trying to make it open so companies can take advantage and mine the data for something. That's pretty much the transition that Todd's kind of initiated there. Is that right?
Exactly. Todd is an amazing person and a close friend. And the impact that he has had on the Department of Health and Human Services and now on the broader federal government since he's assumed the chief technology officer position at the White House has been incalculable. An enormously successful individual in the private sector who's bringing that passion and innovative drive to the federal government and really giving federal government employees a chance to, you know, bloom and embrace transparency and embrace innovation.
I always talk about John Gilroy's donut shop and go, hey, John Gilroy's donut shop got this information. We're just going to expose it. And not really important. But with medical information for millions of people, there is a constraint of security and integration and processing. I mean, this is much more. You just don't take 40 billion Facebook pictures and integrate them into a system to let people use. You have to be very, very careful about who can use it and when can use it. So your hands are tied in many ways compared to the people at Facebook or Yahoo.
That's correct. Specifically with Medicare and Medicaid, we face a lot of statutory restrictions on the precise way in which we can share Medicare and Medicaid claims data. There are traditional avenues such as for research or quality improvement. There have been some new authorizations as a result of the Affordable Care Act. There's an Affordable Care Act program called the Medicare Data Sharing Program for Performance Measurement. It's Section 10332 of the Affordable Care Act. So that authorizes a new release of beneficiary level Medicare information to what we call qualified entities to measure the performance of providers. But I think one of the important things to note here is there's lots and lots that we can do with non-beneficiary information if we aggregate it in a correct and responsible manner that will help people navigate the healthcare system, identify areas of improvement and areas for innovation.
Great. We'll have to take a quick break. When we come back, talk maybe a little about mobile, talk a little about an ACO data feeds and other topics related to healthcare IT. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Niall Brennan, Director of Policy and Data Analysis Group at CMS.
Many forward-thinking enterprises in the government and commercial sectors are using cloud environments to improve scalability, agility, automation, and efficiency. The operating landscape for these organizations is rapidly evolving. Costs are reduced, data is ubiquitous, information is flowing from more sources than ever before. However, the same features that create such high promise for the cloud also bring a potential for new levels of criminal exploitation through fraud. A distinguished panel of top experts will look at the new face of fraud in a digital age, provide insights in how to prevent, detect, and investigate fraud in the cloud, and identify options to combat fraud in the cloud computing world. Listen to The Cloud as a Shroud, Fraud in a Digital Age, as part of the Booz Allen Hamilton Expert Voices panel series, moderated by Executive Vice President Mark Herman, on April 24th at 12 noon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Bill Bransford will discuss the importance of Public Service Recognition Week with Kirk Harper and Jim Seymour from the Public Employees Roundtable.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
How is the U.S. Government Accountability Office working to put the country on a sustainable fiscal path? What is GAO doing to assist Congress and ensure accountability to the American people? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Gene Dodaro, Comptroller General of the United States and head of the U.S. Government Accountability Office, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7742.
Registrations now open for the all-new ACT IAC Management of Change Conference, featuring interactive sessions around cloud, mobility, and security, and a future technology expo, June 3rd through 5th at the Hyatt Regency, Cambridge, Maryland. This government industry training forum is hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. Register and learn more at actgov.org/management of change. That's actgov.org/management of change.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Niall Brennan, who's the Director of Policy and Data Analysis Group over at CMS. Talked about all kinds of different things. Many of my listeners are interested in healthcare IT. They're kind of scratching their head, wondering what this acronym means, that acronym means, meaningful use, ICD, ACO. We can't cover all these topics. We're going to talk about some topics maybe related to big data and some of the important concerns that are current in the news. If you would like to learn more, if you want to go face-to-face with Niall, he'll be speaking at an event this Thursday night. More information on the event, HIMSS-NCA.org, the HIMSS group. And up close and personal, I always like to have that. Maybe someone at this meeting on Thursday night will ask you about ACO. Well, tell me, Niall, what the heck is ACO? Maybe you can explain that for our listeners.
Well, ACOs are accountable care organizations, and they're a critical component of the overall Affordable Care Act, especially when it comes to instituting payment reform mechanisms. Essentially, the concept is that groups of hospitals and doctors will apply to CMS to become ACOs, and in doing so, they will agree to become responsible for the overall care that a patient receives. As many people know, currently, Medicare operates under a fee-for-service system where each provider gets paid a separate fee for each separate service. And that has encouraged a lot of fragmentation of care and a lack of accountability, hence the name Accountable Care Organizations. So we've got two accountable care programs, a pioneer accountable care program, which is being run out of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. That started at the beginning of the year. There are 32 pioneer ACOs around the country. And just this week, we announced an additional 27 MSSP, Medicare Shared Savings Program ACOs, which will be rolled out over the rest of the year.
So what you're trying to do is trying to bridge this gap. Before the show, I told you one of my favorite tweets is the tweet that went out about a month ago. It was, healthcare data today is like driving a car that tells you how fast you were going 4 years ago. So this is what ACO is trying to address. They said, hey, we heard this tweet. We're going to respond.
Exactly. And it's a great quote. Atul Gawande gave the quote. He's written some amazing New Yorker articles on health policy and
healthcare. How do you spell his name?
Atul Gawande, it's A-T-U-L-G-A-W-A-N-D-E.
He's, great, so my listeners can Google that and maybe find
the
article.
Yes, very interesting work in the New Yorker. So that's essentially what ACO providers said to us. They
right,
said,
that's
in
what
order
I,
for us to
yeah.
do our job, you're going to have to do a better job of getting us data. So one of the lesser-known components of the ACO program that will become more and more known as it moves from concept to reality is CMS has undertaken to provide ACO providers with monthly beneficiary claims feeds that will tell them what's actually happening to their beneficiaries, not only for the care that ACO providers are providing to beneficiaries, but also for the care that other providers are giving these beneficiaries. So really, for the first time in a fee-for-service type paradigm, this permits physicians to see the full scope of a patient. That's patient-centered care.
And I think what this is a reflection of is the endeavor by CMS to respond to criticisms or just respond to industry situations with making data more available with ACOs. One situation that's happening now right in front of our very eyes is this whole mobile revolution. You know, I've said many times by the end of the year, there are going to be more mobile devices on the planet than humans. Even doctors, MDs, are carrying around these mobile devices. I picked out a story from Computer World last month. 85% of hospitals are embracing bring your own device. So we have situations where from a data collecting perspective is more data points, more data. Now what? It's going to build and build and build to. Big data is the answer for all this. If more and more people are inputting data, if you're getting situations where you get real-time charting, that means there's real-time demands for information. I mean, this is really multiplying the problem.
Yes. And again, as I said earlier, we're passionate about data. We're passionate about data transparency, and we're passionate about turning data into information. We really do believe that the advent of mobile devices, iPads, iPhones, will be a really a game changer in how healthcare is delivered. Do we have to approach it responsibly? Absolutely. You know, we have to be careful about what data gets shared with who, when, but there's just so much work being done and progress being made in terms of, you know, controlling access to certain types of data that only certain types of people need to see that we truly believe it'll be a game changer.
Speaking of game changers, the CMS is funding some innovation projects, and they took a whole bunch of applications, and right about this time of year, they start releasing some money. And what they're saying is, hey, we don't have all the answers. Maybe somebody sitting in Kansas has the answers. Maybe it's a guy in Miami's got the answers. What we're going to do is try to make some of this data transparent and toss it out there. Maybe someone come up with a solution. Tell me about this Innovation Challenge. Are you familiar with that?
Absolutely. So the Innovation Challenge was launched out of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, another major Affordable Care Act priority. It established the new center and gave it some fairly generous funding over a 10-year period. So they've been engaged in a whole number of efforts. The Pioneer ACO program that I mentioned earlier, bundling demonstrations, demonstrations around comprehensive primary care and medical homes. But the most recent call for applications was indeed a broad-based innovation challenge. We don't claim a monopoly on all the great ideas. We want to, you know, folks around the country to tell us what they're doing, tell us how they're improving care, tell us how they're lowering costs. And so we can evaluate them and ideally disseminate them throughout the whole system, adopt them in Medicare, maybe other payers will adopt them. So it was extremely popular. We received many, many, many applications. CMMI staff are busy combing through and evaluating them on their merits, and people should be hearing the results in the very near future.
And if you are involved in social media and follow Twitter, you see hashtags like hashtag ACA, hashtag health IT, hashtag lowercase m health. I mean, these aren't, you know, small topics. Lots and lots of people are aggressively following these topics, aren't they?
That's correct. Again, you know, we're passionate about this, and stakeholders across the country, and not even stakeholders, individuals across the country are really sort of trying to take the direction that healthcare takes into their own hands. And they're getting on Twitter, they're getting on social media, they're going to, you know, meetings like TEDMED and the Health Data Palooza that'll be coming up in June, and they're networking, they're sharing ideas, and great progress is being made.
Let's talk more about this health data palooza. Sounds like a bunch of people drinking beer in downtown D.C. It isn't, is it? I mean, is this an issue from Todd Park, too? Does he start this? There's another trail here.
Another Todd Park initiative, the health data palooza, modeled after the Lollapalooza.
Yes, we know what it's modeled after.
Of the 80s
degeneracy.
So we try and keep things pretty clean at the data palooza.
You try. You don't accomplish, but you try.
they're incredibly fun, energizing events. This year's event is on June 5th, 6th. The secretary will be appearing. Actually, I believe Atul Gawande, who I mentioned earlier, will also be keynoting. But more importantly, it's the people who are participating. It's people from across the entire spectrum. It's not just federal data wonks getting together. It's folks from Aetna. It's folks from Walgreens. It's folks in the community.
It's anyone listening.
And it's people queuing up to tell us about all the amazing things that they're doing with healthcare data to, again, and improve care.
And you can visit, I think it's Health Data Palooza, DATAPALOOZA. I'm sure you can Google that and find out. When's that going to take place? In June? June 5th and 6th, is that
June
right?
June 5th and 6th, and it might be better if you Google HDI Forum. Mm-hmm. The Data Palooza is a fun term we have for it, but yeah. It's got a more polite official name.
I mean, codathons going, challenges. I mean, there's a whole lot going to be going on down there.
Yeah, there will be codathons. There will be challenges. The federal government is getting very serious about trying to sponsor or enable codathons and challenges wherever myself and Todd Goh. We were in Wisconsin a couple of months ago. We gave a presentation, and you know, by the end of the presentation, there were basically some hackers in the room, and we had arranged to do a codathon. Hackers in a good way.
Yes, these are the white hat hackers, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, it's interesting. It sure seems like CMS is trying to respond to the situation as creatively as possible. I mean, reaching out to the community through innovation grants, reaching out to the community up close and personal. I mean, you're speaking here Thursday night, reaching out to the community at Datapalooza. I mean, it sure looks like you're not leaving any stone unturned to try to seek innovation. And as difficult as that is to find, I mean, innovation, you just don't knock on a door and order 2 pounds of innovation, do you?
Right. And, we know we're doing it because we know we have to do it. Part of it is transparency. One of the first things President Obama signed upon assuming office was promoting more transparency in government. And at CMS, we've really taken that seriously, and also on the innovation side.
I got to be transparent. We have a commercial coming up. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Niall Brennan, Director of Policy and Data Analysis Group at CMS.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and/or complex and/or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
A problem with tapping wind energy is finding space for those huge turbines. But there may be a solution thanks to an unlikely source. Fish. Wind turbines are usually spaced far apart so they don't interfere with each other. But John DeBeery, a Caltech engineer, says a more compact arrangement might not only save space but allow the turbines to work together. He points to schooling fish.
As they swim, they generate vortices, these swirling currents in their wake, and those vortices will interact to help reduce the energy requirements of the whole school of fish.
Computer models show how to precisely place wind turbines for a similar effect.
As the wind is flowing past one of these wind turbines, in certain directions, it's actually accelerated and directed toward the neighbors.
DeBeery says this could allow wind farms closer to cities, where electricity is needed most. To find out more, go to nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is Mike Tanner, VP of Federal for Hitachi Data Systems. Data center consolidation is at the top of every agency's action list. It's hard to know what company to turn to help your agency achieve FDCCI compliance. Listen to this satisfied Hitachi customer.
After conducting a complete return on investment, we verified that by choosing Hitachi, our agency saved $500,000 using dynamic provisioning across our data center.
Learn how Hitachi storage virtualization can reduce costs without adding complexity in your data center. Visit Hitachi at hds.com.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
National Spa Week is April 16th to 22nd. That's when spas throughout the Washington, Northern Virginia, and Maryland area participate in some deals and specials that take place all through the week. So if you've never been to a day spa or a regular spa, it might be a time to try it out. You can find out more information and locations on page 55 of the April Recreation News, or, of course, at recreationnews.com.
How about something that's a little bit more active?
Well, you might want to check out Massanutten Resort down near Harrisonburg, Virginia, in the Shenandoah Valley. They really expanded beyond skiing to a true four-season resort. They've got golf, a huge indoor-outdoor water park, and lots of other activities. There are a number of overnight and multi-day golf and water park packages that they're running right now during the springtime. Great prices and lots of extras included. You want to check out page 42 of the April Recreation News.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have the man from Ireland, Niall Brennan, Director of Policy and Data Analysis Group at CMS. We've been talking about all kinds of crazy acronyms, everything from EHRs to ICDs to AOSs. And I want to talk about an ACA provision, and this is another little acronym or catchphrase called 10332. What's that all about?
Well, Section 10332 of the Affordable Care Act is my baby, so I'm a little biased here.
I better be gentle then, huh?
I help lead the rulemaking and turning it, you know, from a law into an actual program. So it's a really great innovative provision. What it does is it provides 100% extracts of Medicare Parts A, B, and D data, that's hospital, physician, and drug data, to qualified entities for performance measurement purposes. But before we give it to the qualified entity, they have to prove to us that they have other claims data from other payers that they're going to combine with the Medicare data in order to create reports for physicians and hospitals and pharmacists and other providers that actually cover all or most of the spectrum of care that they deliver. So right now you have a scenario where physicians are receiving a report from United based on 20 people and a report from Aetna based on 25 people and no report from Medicare at all. And what this does is it completely establishes a new paradigm where physicians can get a report covering all or most of their practice that's actionable, that uses standard measures, that has transparent methodologies. I'm a huge fan of this program.
I'm sure there are physicians out there, first question is going to be, what's your methodology on that, buddy, and start beating you up. I've had physicians in here, and they're not easy characters many times. They're quite demanding. Demanding of themselves, too. That makes sense. A lot of people like to blog and read blogs. I'll be blogging about this interview at my company, which is Armature Corp. That's where my little blog is. Is there a blog that you read? Do you have a blog yourself, or maybe somebody can suggest for the listeners maybe to read to catch up on things?
Shamefully, I don't have a blog myself. The excuse I'll give is that I'm too busy. I'm serving the public at my
I like
CMS
that excuse.
Job.
Yeah. No, I understand. It makes perfect sense.
So I do try and follow some blogs. Obviously, being in Washington, D.C., they tend to be of the, you know, Politico, CQ, BNA Health Watch nature. There's this person I follow on Twitter who I rely on for a lot of my, I guess, random health IT-related information. I'm not even sure who he is, but his Twitter handle is A-H-I-E-R, A-Hire. And he just tweets at a prodigious rate. And so, you know, he links to articles about HIT being used in emergency rooms and really across the care spectrum to great effect.
He tweets at a prodigious rate. No one would have said that 5 years ago, huh? That would have been someone from maybe from Mars or something. I think there are some blogs at the HIMSS site. HIMSS, of course, is based in Chicago, and it's H-I-M-S-S. I'm sure they have blogs. I don't know if the local chapter has a blog or not. But a lot of people like to keep up on information and follow people, trending topics. Speaking of a trending topic, a lot of people talk about business intelligence, and they take this data and they produce something graphically, and they call that BI, and there's a whole world of BI out there. Now, physicians like to have data presented too. They like to have data when they are evaluated. When you evaluate surgeons, they want to have very precise data evaluated. But there's also something called a dashboard, enrollment dashboard. Tell us about that.
Well, so we're very committed to better visualization and better business intelligence at CMS. The Medicare enrollment dashboard is just a very small example, again, of how we've worked hard to make data more transparent and more accessible. Surprisingly enough, when I got to the agency, I realized that there really wasn't one single place where you could go to get information on all the different components of the Medicare program. So you would go to one part of the program to get information on Medicare fee-for-service, Parts A and B. You would go to another part of the website to get information on what beneficiaries were enrolled in private plans, the Medicare Advantage program. And then you'd go somewhere else to get information on what beneficiaries were enrolled in Part D plans. So we just sat down, we said, really, we can do better than this. And so we designed a dashboard that takes all that information together. It presents it in a really interesting graphical way. You can slice it and dice it a little bit yourself. If you only want to see state numbers, you can see state numbers. You can see trends over time dating back to the very inception of the Medicare program. So we're very proud of it.
You know, what's interesting is that If you work for an organization for 15 or 20 years, people say, well, why do you put the paper there? Well, he's always put the paper that way. That's how he's always done it. Then you get someone new that comes in, like a Todd Park, and he goes, why do you put the paper there? And they go, he's always done it that way. And he says, well, wait. I'm an outsider looking in. I'm going to shake things up. Someone like you is going to walk in, and he's going to say, look, here's my experience. I got academic experience. I know some smart people at the Brookings Institute. And why are you doing it this way? And it's almost an outsider coming in, shaking things up is more, it's easier than someone who's been there for 15 years, maybe protecting their fiefdom. And I think I see a lot of that from both you and Todd.
I mean, definitely, I think a lot of processes can benefit from a fresh set of eyes every few years. CMS has an amazing, dedicated workforce, and I'm privileged to work with incredible people every day. But you know, you can always improve on how you do things. You can always improve on how you execute. You can always engage in a little, you know, business process reengineering to make things quicker. Think of the customer. Think of who wants this data and how you can get it to them easier and quicker and better.
I tell my kids that the biggest room in the world is the room for improvement. And they hate that, but it's one of my catchphrases, but, you know, they're sick of hearing that. Let's jump from room for improvement to some data. There's something called a hospital referral region that you've been involved in. What's that got to the CMS, and how can that help our listeners out?
So, again, this is something that we're extremely proud of. So hospital referral regions are geographic clusters. They were developed by the researchers at the Dartmouth Atlas, Elliot Fisher and Jack Wenberg, who sort of first popularized the notion of comparing geographic variations in Medicare spending and asking why Medicare spending in one part of the country might be so much greater than Medicare spending in another part of the country. So hospital referral regions, there are 306 of them in the United States. So the way I describe it is smaller than a state, larger than a county. And what we did is we took all the Medicare data that I alluded to earlier, 1.2 billion claims in a given year. We layered lots of business intelligence on it. We calculated readmission rates. We calculated ED visits per 1,000 population. We calculated the rates of potentially avoidable hospitalizations. And we aggregated it all at the hospital referral region level. And then we said, well, this is great information. This is information that can help people in one part of the country compare themselves to the area right next to them or compare themselves to upstate New York. And so we published it publicly in two places, on the Health Indicators Warehouse. It's a very user-friendly data warehouse where the data can be downloaded either directly or via API, and also on the Institute of Medicine website. So now anybody can download this data and immediately see how their area stacks up to the rest of the country in terms of Medicare spending.
Now, there was a mayor in New York City. One of his catchphrases, he'd walk up to a citizen and go, oh, how am I doing? And I think, you know, we can talk about big data, and we can talk about transparency, we can talk about evaluating yourself, but many people in the medical community, in the medical IT community, they want to know, okay, my rate's 32%. How does that compare with someone in New England? And that's what this is all about. It's, how am I doing? Well, you're doing pretty good, or you're doing pretty bad, or how can someone evaluate a group of surgeons unless they know how would they do compared to surgeons in the Pacific Northwest?
Exactly. And you can have those types of conversations. We spend 40% more on home health care than the national average. Why is that?
I'm sure there's people who could debate that all day long. We're not going to debate it here. We're going to talk more about data and open data. Inevitably, when you think about big data, you read articles about it. You talk to the people at Cloudera and find out what they're up to. They talk about structured and unstructured data. Now, I don't want to give you a five-hour response to this. Tell us, for our listeners' perspective, what is structured, what's unstructured data in regard to big data?
So a lot of the data that we deal with at CMS could be described as structured data. For example, claims data is very structured data. There's a lot of it, but we generally know exactly, you know, what's going to come in on the claim, ICD-9 code, CPT, data service, who the beneficiary was, et cetera, et cetera. Elements of it can be, you know, unstructured or dirty, I guess, you know, and you have to figure out how to clean and parse the information you need. Unstructured data is a little different. It could be we log all the calls to our 1-800 Medicare number, and you know, we summarize the types of conversations that those counselors are having with beneficiaries. And so, you know, a classic use of big data would be to marry the unstructured 1-800 Medicare call summaries with the very structured claims data, and see, are there ways in which we can, you know, use information that's in calls to 1-800 Medicare to maybe predict what's going to happen at the point of healthcare delivery a couple of hours or a couple of days later.
In some worlds, that's called predictive analytics. That sounds pretty impressive. We're going to have to take a quick break. We come back, talk more about big data, talk more about maybe using this data to predict things that may help our audience. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with Don Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Niall Brennan, Director of Policy and Data Analysis Group at CMS.
Here's Alan Hansen, Chief Intelligence Systems and Processing Division of the Army, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data, sponsored by Informatica.
Trickles down to where we're all going to, and that's deep dive analysis mm-hmm. of information. Having deep dive analysis to look at trends, to look at predicting intent, as I was mentioning early on today, these are very critical today because the information is there. It's just finding it and, right. and being able to expose it and getting right. it to the right user.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Government leaders have one thing in common. They know data is their biggest asset, but that asset is growing exponentially. Data is expected to grow by as much as 44 times over the next year to a staggering 35.2 zettabytes. Welcome to the era of big data. How will your agency effectively process the volume of data to support missions, serve citizens, and provide the right information to the right individuals? Informatica helps government agencies to move, take in, and manage their data, regardless of how much, what kind, or where it is. Visit informatica.com.
Arming your home with a security system gives you peace of mind. Now get peace of mind for your wallet. Ackerman Security will monitor your system for $18.95 a month.
I was paying too much for monitoring, so I made the switch to Ackerman Security's Certified Monitoring Center. Now I'm paying only $18.95 a month with no cost to switch.
Call today and get 2 months of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring free. 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon Family Groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon Family Group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Many factors affect job satisfaction. Hours, teammates, and opportunity can all make or break an experience. That's why it was an impressive achievement when 100% of employees surveyed recently reported they were proud to work for Acuity Inc. With a 766% growth rate and recognition as a best place to work, Acuity is attracting talented, passionate professionals and keeping them happy. Learn more. Visit myacuity.com/careers.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Neil Brennan, who is the Director of Policy and Data Analysis Group at CMS. We've been talking about everything under the sun, so many acronyms, I'm all confused between HIMSS and this and OCD and who knows what. Let me talk about something real simple. Let's talk about buttons. Anish Chopra likes to talk about the green button over at DOE, but you want to talk about this blue button, which is a similar project over at the VA, is that right? So what is this blue button thing?
So blue button is yet another effort that we have undertaken to get health data into the hands of people who can actually use it. In this case, it's people, it's beneficiaries, whether they're enrolled in the VA, Medicare, or even FEHB is now mandating that participating plans provide blue button technology. So essentially what it does is it creates an easy to use tool. You go to the Medicare or the VA website, you pass the authentication protocols to prove that you really are the person that you say you are. And you can download your healthcare data into a spreadsheet, and then there people are developing apps where it can be imported into the app, and again visually tell you what's going on. You can take it to your doctor's office. You can do whatever you want with it.
I think if you're a veteran and retired in Norfolk, and then you move to Kansas City to be with your grandchildren, well, you can take and transfer things a lot easier. And let's face it, Americans do tend to move around. I mean, if any physician, I don't know how many people have the same position for a certain number of years, and it's just the whole electronic health record and just makes things a whole lot easier for our society today. We talked about Twitter and Twitter feeds before. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilroy because some Irish guy named John Gilroy took my name. I'm going to have to fly over there and get him. But there's someone you follow, and it's A. H-I-E-R, is that the fellow you follow for medical information, healthcare IT information?
Yeah, he's based out in Oregon, and again, he's a machine, and he's very good at sort of identifying and disseminating information.
Trends,
via
huh?
Twitter.
Yeah. Wow, so he sits out in the West Coast, and he can perceive things that most mm-hmm. people can't. Well, that's interesting. Well, before we got to the studio here, there's many listeners who are listening to that funny accent and going, well, I don't know if he's really a nerd, and he claims to be a nerd, but maybe not. But I'm going to give you my scientific 10-question test, and then I'm going to rate you, Niall, okay? First question, what was the year you bought your first computer?
1983.
Three, you're in grade school there, buddy, huh?
I was 11.
11 years
Spectrum
old.
Spectrum 48K.
Oh, wow. Your first cell phone?
1994.
Well, that was respectable. And you do not have a Twitter feed. That's a black mark. And you do not have a blog. You're sinking fast on this one. What kind of a personal backup online do you use?
iCloud.
That's good. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone.
What? And how many apps are on this iPhone?
I'd say about 40 or 50.
Okay, that's reasonable. Do you have any tablet devices?
iPad, Kindle.
Double trouble.
Am I doing better?
You're doing better. What kind of social networking sites do you participate in?
Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter.
Okay. And key question, last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Oh, paper.
Me too.
The Hunger Games trilogy.
Really?
I stole them from my daughter.
What a guy you are, stealing from your little innocent daughter. I'm shocked. Yeah, I just finished a biography of Caesar, mm-hmm. written by a guy named Adrian mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. from England, of all places.
But I don't know what I'd do without the New York Times on my iPhone. It is how I ingest that particular news source these days, 100% electronically.
Let's get back to something serious like big data and what my listeners are actually interested in. So we got structured and unstructured data. And typically what you have is if you have a lot of unstructured data, what you try to do is try to kind of herd that information. And the information may be too large to herd or manipulate with standard database tools. So you have to switch the database tools from the stuff you normally use to new types of tools. But that can bring all kinds of problems in distributing the data to cloud services and security and everything else. So this just managing this amount of information is challenging, and figuring out the secure tools is challenging too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge challenge for us. We're constantly evaluating and reevaluating what tools we need to use. We store enormous amounts of data, and you know, obviously there is a big push to move a lot of information to the cloud now. We're thinking about it. We're taking it very seriously. We're testing out a couple of enclave environments where folks can actually come in to our environment and play with the data there, as opposed to us cutting and shipping data, which has, you know, its own set of pros and cons.
When you look for people to hire at CMS, do you look for people with healthcare IT background? Do you look for people who are just creative and knowledgeable? Do you look for people with complete different background, maybe someone from the finance community? Or what kind of talent do you look for over there?
I look for a mix of people. I'm really lucky. The folks on my team are incredibly talented, incredibly dedicated, and they sort of encompass a wide range of people, from more hardcore health IT folks to, you know, highly analytic type informatic people, people who like to, you know, get lost in the data. I call them data ninjas. We actually do have some former, more MBA financial types as well. So I place a really big premium on trying to bring in the brightest people that I can find, and, you know, give them structure, but also allow them find themselves a little bit.
Yeah, one of the gurus over at Cloudera is named Hammerbacher, and he spent some time in New York messing around with numbers and learning how to manage numbers and finance, and he wound up managing the big data, because a lot of parallels there, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, the numbers that we deal with, the Medicare claims, they're, you know, each claim has a payment associated to it, and those payments sum up to very, very large sums of money that, you know, drive significant portions of Wall Street and significant portions of the American economy.
This is part of the interview where I get up my crystal ball and have you look deep into it and tell me, what's going to happen 5 years, 10 years? Where do you see this whole evolution? Do you think people are going to get rid of desktop computers? Is everything going to be tablet-based? What's going to happen to CMS? What kind of transition is going to take place? I mean, there's so many paths to go down here.
My personal goal and hope is that CMS will be recognized in 5 years as a leader in, you know, transparency, open government, but more importantly, of being like truly in charge of our own data destiny and working with numerous stakeholders and partners and, you know, everybody across the healthcare ecosystem to make the system better, to improve quality, to lower costs. Will we move away from desktops? You know, it's hard to say. I'm a huge fan of mobile technologies. I'm a huge fan of tablets. But sometimes, you know, a programmer may always still need to have that, you know, screen and that keyboard to make the magic happen.
We had a bunch of folks over the house, I think, 2 weeks ago. Guy walked in with his iPad. And I said, well, you better be careful. You may not walk out of there because my wife may steal it from you. It's very attractive, very seductive. I mean, for data collection, I think I see a lot of people maybe keeping their desktop computer and maybe not using a notebook, but bringing a tablet home. And you got to figure people in the health IT community is going to do the exact same thing. And so all of a sudden, you get people like me waltzing into CMS saying, no, I want to use this device. Who knows what it may be, an Android device, an Apple device. And it's just got to be confusing for someone like you to anticipate how you can flex the strategy in the future.
Yeah, and you have to strike the balance between being, you know, as flexible as you can be with not, you know, letting, you know, rogue devices into protected systems.
And that's it's a challenge many of my listeners have. Just want to reiterate what you're going to be in 2 days. You'll be speaking at HIMSS, which is over in Roslyn, right near a metro stop. No problem at all. More information, you can go to himss-nca.org. Going to be about 3 or 4 people on a panel, an evening meeting. Is that right?
That's correct.
So talk about all kinds of things, including big data. What are the topics you can talk about?
Big data, open government, transparency, translating data into information, just, you know.
And this is a 2-hour meeting or 20 hours? This is a 2-hour meeting.
It's things could run late.
Yeah, I would think so. So if you want more information, go to that website. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Niall Brennan, Director of Policy and Data Analysis Group, CMS.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.